Welcome to The Fantastic Pour, a proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. This is the podcast that combines comics, cocktails, and conversation for your listening pleasure. I am your host, Brett Young. And because whether it's hot or not, I wanted an FW team up. So I'm joined by Fire & Water All-Star, Siskoid. Siskoid, welcome to the Fantastic Lounge. How you doing, man?
Well, I'm always happy to chat about comics. Brett, sports, no. Comics, yes. Brett knows what he's done. Hot or not, I think it is very hot right now.
Yeah. What is it? How is it up there right now? What temperatures are you looking at?
I mean, that's not going to mean anything to you. It's in the 30s.
That doesn't mean anything.
I think it means in the 90s Fahrenheit, I think. Maybe. That's
probably.
We're at the point where it's not cooling down during the night, so the house is a hot box.
Oh, gosh.
And, you know, we're not equipped like a lot of, you know, people in the United States. Here in Canada, not everybody has AC.
Right.
It just doesn't seem like you need it.
Right.
Or it used to be that way. So we're in a bit of a heat wave at the moment.
Yeah. So I'm in the Washington, D.C. area, which right around this time, July 4th, usually kicks off. And for everyone, we're recording this right around the July 4th weekend. This is the time that basically kicks off 2 months of oppressive heat and humidity and swamp-like temperatures. So it's just a joy around here for the next 2 months.
You live in a swamp. I live on a swamp.
Well, I'm excited to have you on the show, and I almost feel bad it's taken so long because don't tell the other guys, but the podcast we recorded about Tango and Cash was so much fun. I had a blast doing that. Maybe the funnest podcast I've done so far. So that was such a great time that I definitely wanted to have you on the show here as well.
I think the other guys don't listen to the show. So
well, that's
you're
true.
Safe.
That's
your
true.
Secret's safe.
They won't hear this. That's true. They won't hear this part. So now before we get started, if you like this show and many others in the Fire & Water Podcast Network, consider supporting our efforts and become a Patreon at patreon.com/FW Podcast. There you can unlock various rewards, including being name checked on the show of your choice. Thanks to Sean Ross and Jay Campbell for choosing the Fantastic Pour. Now, Siskoid, if Sean and Jay starred in a movie, would it be more of like a buddy cop situation like Tango and Cash, or do you think they'd be adversaries?
Well, I don't know Jay personally, but Sean is so easygoing. Now, I can't see it as anything but, you know, being true buddies.
Right.
I think it should be a Turner and Hooch situation. You know, and we throw a cat in the car to test Sean's bonkers notion that cats are evil. And then the cat saves both their lives at the end of the movie.
That would be brilliant. Okay, well, let's get on with the show. So sometime ahead of recording each podcast, I ask my guests two things. Choose an alcohol, beverage, or ingredient that they enjoy, and choose a comic book character they love. Now, based on the answers, I come up with a cocktail for us to create and choose a comic book to discuss. Now, Siskoid, please tell our friends in the lounge your chosen ingredient and comic book character. Let's start with your character.
I chose Godzilla. Not entirely comic books, but he's in the heck of a lot of comic books.
He is. Yeah.
Like, normally, it would have been Hawkeye, like when you announced the show.
Right.
But then you let someone else have it. And then it kept happening. And everyone was grabbing my favorites. So have some very basic tastes, I guess. So this is more of an out-of-the-box choice that I know nobody else. The Big G, who, despite being a film character, you'll have to admit, is in a lot of comics.
Oh, yeah.
Especially these days. And I've always been a big fan. And I can honestly say that I've seen every movie in every era.
Really?
The good, the bad, and the ugly, looking at Yushin Godzilla. Whether he's been a hero or a villain, I don't care. Mothra is my lady, but Gajira is my dude. And I haven't read all the comics, so I kind of just let you, Brett, choose one at random.
Right.
I think you based your selection on the cover alone, possibly?
Pretty much. Yeah, I went on Mike's Amazing World and just looked at all the covers, and I was like, oh, I like this one. So that's basically how I chose it. Yeah, I chose the book by its cover, more or less.
Yeah, and it's going to be a first-time read for me.
Oh, very good. Very good.
As you'll see.
All right. Well, as far as Hawkeye goes, you can blame, again, maybe you shouldn't have been so nice to Sean Ross, because it's Sean's fault that you missed out on Hawkeye, by the way. So
you give the guy an opportunity and it's just like he takes the whole thing.
Yeah. Yep. See, you just never know. But anyway, so Godzilla, real name, Steve, oddly enough. Isn't that weird? No, it's Godzilla. He was created, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, this is the information I found. He's created in 1954 by Tomoyuki Tanaka, a producer at Toho Studios in Japan. And his first Marvel Comics appearance was Godzilla, King of Monsters, issue one, May of 1977. And that was written by Doug Mensch, art by Herb Trimpe and Jim Mooney. Now, we'll get back to Godzilla soon. But in the meantime, Siskoi, tell us your ingredient of choice.
Well, I'm not a teetotaler or anything, but I don't drink very often, maybe twice a year or something. Maybe I'll have a soju or something fizzy, maybe a glass of wine. I don't know. I guess Ohad Mordat, the fashion specials that we do, always have a drink attached. So I don't have a whole lot of alcohol in my cupboard, is what I'm saying. And I didn't want to buy a bottle just for the podcast. So I had
Thanks.
some
Thanks a
cooking.
lot. Thanks a lot. I appreciate
Yeah, I had some cooking brandy, and that's why I suggested it. Coincidentally, it's the first spirit I ever drank. Well, it was cognac, but it's the same family. Because my dad, who fancies himself kind of an alcohol connoisseur, I certainly worked his vineyard for several summers. So
Really?
he wanted us to try it, and I was 10 in the story, and I think I avoided the gene for alcoholism regardless. Thank you very much, but yeah, so. As it turns out, when I tried to follow your recipe, but I didn't have enough brandy, so it's gonna be what it's gonna be. I had to borrow the orange liquor.
Did you borrow that from one of the girls?
Somebody's dad had a bottle, and then I thought, well, I have the brandy already. Except I can't. I mean, I can't eyeball an ounce to save my life. It's not the metric system, Brett. So
Well,
as
it's like a shot glass. It's
A
sort of
shot,
like an
right?
ounce
So
and a
I used
half.
a shot, but I can't eyeball it anyway. So I only had, I mean, so the recipe is screwed up, but it's half and it's half and half instead of two to one.
All right. Well, that's all right. That's all right. Being someone who is not as big a drinker, that might have worked to your favor, actually, a little bit.
Okay.
Made it a
I guess I
little
get
less
less
strong.
alcohol.
Yeah, exactly. So I want to hear more about this vineyard. What was this vineyard you worked on?
So in Texas, as I've spoken before on other podcasts on the network, I spent about 6 summers in Texas. My parents are divorced. Eventually, my dad migrated there. He's a medical doctor, physician, so there's opportunities in tiny towns. So I live in Ballinger, Texas, Central Texas.
Really? See, I didn't know any of this. I don't listen to the other
No,
shows. You
well, I
know
mean,
that.
you're new to the network. You haven't he heard all my old stories. From this, I mean, only summers, right? I did my schooling here in Canada, and then on the second year, maybe whatever, he bought some. My dad was very into posh things and looking flash kind of thing, and so he wanted obviously he wanted a ranch, and then the ranch became a vineyard because that's posh, and it had a winery attached and everything for a while. Bluebonnet Hill Vineyards is called, or was. And I worked it. I mean, from what I remember, he wanted the plants to be set up in a European way, which is more tightly packed, I think, or I it's either more tightly. Yeah, I guess it's more tightly packed, not the California style. And sold a lot of the grapes to the Texas University of Texas, where they have some sort of winery program, but also produce some of his own wine. So working there meant checking gauges. I think I participated in one harvest. It just wasn't when we were going. And for a while worked at one summer or two, worked at the winery, gave tours, that kind of thing.
Oh wow. I had no idea. I didn't know any of that. That's really interesting. Wow, that's a, so the vineyard is no longer there, you said?
I think the vineyard's still there. I know my what's pretty famous about the whole relationship is I haven't talked to him since 1996 or something. So who knows? But he no longer lives in Ballinger. That much I know, and I think he probably sold the vineyard at some point.
All right,
I'm gonna say
wow.
probably.
All right, we'll go and hold you to that. That's really interesting. I had no idea. Wow, you worked on a vineyard. That's very cool.
I've done a
All
lot of things. I've done a lot of weird things.
right. Well, we're going to be now that we Siskoid has sort of mentioned some of the other ingredients. We're going to be creating a classic cocktail featuring brandy called a sidecar. Now, before we go over the recipe, Let's talk a little bit more about the Brandy sidecar in a segment I like to call Secret Porigens. So you see what I did there with the combination? You got that. Okay, good. We're good. All right. Thank you for that deadpan response. I appreciate that. All right. So anyway, the origin of the sidecar, thanks to loopmag.com and liquor.com for research and quotes. The origin of the sidecar, a classic cocktail, is muddled in mystery. The drink is traditionally made with cognac, orange liqueur, which could be Cointreau, Grand Marnier, dry Curacao, or triple sec, and a lemon juice. Based on the ingredients, the drink is most similar to the Brandy Crusta, first created by a Jewel of the South bartender Joseph Santini in the mid-1800s in New Orleans. That blends brandy, maraschino liqueur, Curacao, fresh lemon juice, and bitters. Now, the Brandy Crusta had a sugared rim, which is why often the sidecar is also garnished that way as well. As with most classic cocktails, the exact origin of the sidecar is unclear, but it is thought to have been invented in either London or Paris around the end of World War I. Now, the Ritz Hotel in Paris claims the origin of the drink. First recipe for the sidecar appeared in 1922 in Harry McElhorn's Harry's ABCs of Mixing Cocktails. McElhorn's book cites the sidecar inventor as Pat McGarry, the, quote, popular bartender at Buck's Club in London, unquote. But in later editions, he cites himself as the inventor as well. Now, also in 1922, another book, Cocktails and How to Mix Them, author Robert Vermeer agrees with McElhorn's earlier volumes that the sidecar was very popular in France, but was first introduced in London by McGarry, a celebrated bartender of the Buck's Club. Published in 1948, David A. Embry's The Fine Art of Mixing Drinks credited the invention of the drink to an American army captain in Paris during World War I and named after the motorcycle sidecar that the captain used. Oftentimes, the captain was driven home this way because he had had too many. Bar veteran Dale DeGroff, however, says the drink's name references the mixture that's left in the shaker after straining and served in a shot glass on the side. This bonus is called, of course, a sidecar. So those are the many different tales of the sidecar. For most part, people seem to think it was, like you said, either in London or France. Who really knows? We never will, but let's enjoy one. So
some of that did sound familiar because since you enjoyed the tales of my patchwork life.
Yes.
So you
invented the sidecar? Is that what you're about to tell me?
No. Okay. Well, I could have because it seems to be up in the air, but a lot of that sounded familiar because I used to work for a television quiz show. And they once did an episode on mixology and I wrote, a bunch of questions about that. So a lot of drinks have this kind of origin, you know?
Yes.
Everybody says it's them and, you know, specific bars and specific people. And it's interesting.
Yeah. That's happened a lot with a lot of the research I've done for a lot of the drinks, especially, you know, ones of some of the classics like the margarita and things like that. There's a million different stories, and there'll always be a couple that are, and I would research a couple that are prevalent, but even the couple that are prevalent, depending on your source, those vary even as far as like how it was created, even though they may both say it was created around this year at this restaurant or hotel or bar or whatever. But even then they'll say, well, they use this and this, or this person used this and this, and this is why they did it. So, yeah, I mean, it's fun that way because you can kind of almost choose your own adventure, you know, believe what you want. So,
and in fact, you did because what we're drinking is actually a variation, your own variation that fits the comic.
Yes. So I always do. I always kind of like, especially for ones when we're doing more classic drinks, there's usually a lot of subtle variations in them as far as how they do them. I just kind of usually do an amalgamation of them. You're familiar with amalgamations, of course, from one of your shows. And so I just usually do one that fits the bill and will work with everybody. So anyway, it's happy hour. So Siskoid, let's make this drink. I call this the Kaiju Cowboy. Siskoid, tell our friends what we need.
So ingredients per drink is 2 ounces of brandy, or one if you're an idiot like me. 1 ounce of orange liqueur, such as Cointreau. I use triple sec in this case.
That's fine.
Half an ounce of lemon juice, freshly squeezed. Mm-hmm. I did that. Garnish is an orange twist. You can substitute a lemon twist since you already have the lemon there.
Mm-hmm.
I did that. And then another garnish is the sugar rim, which you marked as optional. But yes. Frankly, this is the thing I aced. I've never done that before, and it looks great.
Good.
And then your instructions are coat the rim of a coupe glass with sugar. I don't have that, so it's just a normal glass.
Coupe glass, martini glass, whatever glass you have handy. Yes,
yeah, I don't have one with a foot or anything.
That's fine.
And then set aside. Add the cognac, orange liquor, and lemon juice into a shaker with ice and shake well until chilled. Strain, I guess, to get the ice out, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Strain into the prepared glass. Garnish with the orange or lemon twist.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Boom.
Very good. So listen, so Sisko and I are going to enjoy our Kaiju Cowboy as he explains the metric system to me. Everyone in the lounge is welcome to drink along and listen to this promo break.
In 2011, the Irredeemable Shag and Aqua Rob Kelly teamed up to create the Fire and Water Podcast. In 2016, they teamed up with Ryan Daly, The Franklins, and Siskoid to form the Fire and Water Podcast Network. A network built on teaming up needs a show about team-ups.
Marvel Team-Up.
Yes.
The Brave and the Bold?
You know it.
Marvel 2-in-1.
It's clobbering time.
DC Comics presents.
Of course.
Supervillain Team-Up?
Good idea.
Youngblood X-Force?
Technically.
FW Team Up, coming this summer, only from the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
And we are back. We've been gone for 3 kilometers time. Did I do that right, Siskoid? Is that how that works?
Absolutely.
Yeah, perfect. Absolutely. Now that we had a chance to taste our Kaiju Cowboy, what do you think?
I like the sugar rim. Well, it's certainly got a fire to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right in the belly, which works well for Godzilla. Otherwise, it's very citrusy,
mm-hmm.
obviously. So it's fine, but I don't know how often I drink this. Maybe I shouldn't have poured it into a motorcycle part. I got confused.
No, well that might not have helped. Yeah. So yeah, the sidecar is a very traditional cocktail, and as we talked about before. When Sisko was trying to come up with an ingredient, he said, hey, I have some brandy handy. So I was like, all right, well, what's a good brandy drink? I know the sidecar. So sidecar is nice. The sugar rim, especially if you don't drink a lot of brandy or cognac, it definitely helps smooth it out. Now, the citrus in there and the triple sec, or if you use Cointreau or Grand Marnier, whatever you're going to use, also has a lot of that orange citrusy flavor to it too. So you get a lot of that as well, but especially if it's done sort of the more traditional way where it's about 2 ounces of, it's like a 2-to-1 brandy to orange liqueur. The brandy stands out and will keep you warm, as he said, that will sort of light that fire inside for you and keep you warm on these hot summer nights. But yeah, I don't drink a ton of, brandy or cognac. I used Cavassier for this one, the VSOP. It worked fine for me. And it is something I will have on that rare occasion. I'd say definitely probably the best I've ever had was Louis the 13th, which is a cognac that's made. It's made by Remy Martin, and it's bottled in these specific bottles that each, the bottle itself without any alcohol in it is worth about $500. I forget how much the actual bottle goes for, but it's something if you're having a snifter of Louis the 13th at a bar, it's these days, God, it's probably going to cost you about $200 a shot. And that's probably for about an ounce, ounce and a half. But I did not pay.
My brandy was Remy Martin, but not the upscaled one.
No, well, Remy has many versions and many variations, but it is a trustworthy brand by far. So there's nothing wrong with that. And truth be told, I did not pay that money for a shot of this. I was working at a bar in DC that was actually closing down, And we were taking all the top shelf liquor off one night. It was just me and one of the other bartenders and the bar manager. And we were taking down the Louis XIII. And I asked the bar manager, was like, hey, come on, how about we enjoy a shot of this? So we did. And it was very good. It was very smooth. I don't know. I still don't know if I just out in the wild would pay $200 for a shot of it, but it was good stuff. So anyway, that's my trip down memory lane with brandy. So it was something that you're enjoying, but not necessarily something that you'd have on a regular basis. You're not going to sit out on your front porch and down a sidecar while you're watching the birds or anything like that. No,
no, I think it's too warm. Mm-hmm. Probably, you know. So I mean, I've had phases where I would have like these specific drinks, and usually it's stuff that other people don't want to drink.
Like what? You know?
Like I'm a bit like I like to I used to like to finish a night. Like you drink your four beers, and that's more than enough for me. And then I would finish the night off with Jager on ice, that kind of thing. So it's, you know, So right now, like if I'm going to drink something, it's probably going to be soju, you know, the Korean drink.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for everyone. And that's kind of how my palate works.
Yeah.
I like to eat and drink the stuff that's not for everyone. That way I don't have to share.
Well, that's a good point. Didn't think about that. Very good. While we enjoy our Kaiju Cowboy in the Fantastic Lounge, how about some fine literature? The comic we will be discussing that involves Godzilla is Godzilla issue 16. Publisher Marvel Comics, cover date November 1978, on sale date August 1st, 1978, cover price 35 cents. The title, The Great Godzilla Roundup. Writer Doug Mensch, penciler Herb Trimpe, inker Daniel Green, letterer Gene Simic, colorist Francois.
Francoise, Mouly. This is Francoise. The female.
Francoise, version. Okay. And that, is it Mouly?
Mouly, probably.
Mouly, yeah. Okay. Editor Bob Hall. And cover artist Herb Trimpe. Thank you for Mike's Amazing World of Comics for that information. Now, Siskoid, would you like to tell our friends in the Fantastic Lounge what this story is all about?
Short synopsis. With Godzilla still on the rampage near Salt Lake City, rancher John Hawks, after having his house trampled on, arranges another group of cowpokes to try and rustle up Godzilla, who he believes has been eating his cattle. After this around the King of Monsters, one of Hawks' men, Crazy Luke, even manages to rope and ride Godzilla for a while. However, the Big G smashes open a canyon to flee and leads Hawk to the cattle, which have actually been stolen by Bill Ford and his man Lefty Walsh, a rival rancher who's been trying to buy the other half of Hawk's herd at bargain price. So, yeah, he's shady. When Ford tries to shoot Hawks, Godzilla knocks him off the canyon peak and to his death. Then Hawk and his posse leave Godzilla to find his own way.
What did we'll just jump right into it. What'd you think of the cover? This cover that I chose from specifically.
Godzilla peeks over a canyon mouth to roar at cowboys. I'm into it. One of them has a lasso around a tooth. It's being swung around. This happens in the issue. Great. Mm-hmm. First, it's a good idea just to concentrate on the head because Trimpe's Godzilla is a bit chunky.
Mm-hmm.
So the head, though, you know, it can look like pretty cool. But his Western characters, of course, look good. And mm-hmm. the lasso guy swings towards us. So you can see like there's a real perspective with the further cowhands shooting pointlessly into the mouth of the beast.
Right.
So there's a sense of scale without sacrificing, you know, the look of the cowboys and the anatomy and all of that. Mm-hmm. And then there's like this big yellow sky that burns my eyes. But I guess the cover is what made you pick it. So, you know, it's got to have worked for you on some level.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I wanted to do a Godzilla. I didn't want to do, because this is in Marvel Comics, there are issues where he's encounters Marvel superheroes. And I didn't want to do this because this was about Godzilla. And I figured if we got into something, it was like, oh, hey, here's Spider-Man. Then Spider-Man's going to take over half the
right.
story.
Like
and
in modern comics.
Yes, exactly.
You know, there's, yeah. And I mean, at first it was like he's fighting S.H.I.E.L.D. That could have been cool as well. But suddenly a Western comic with Godzilla, that's mm-hmm. unusual. So that's fun.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought it was a good mashup. And like I said, the cover pretty much spells it out for you. It's what you get inside. You get, you know, cowboys versus Godzilla is pretty much what it is. And it was a lot of fun. So I like the cover as well. Trimpius Godzilla is it's interesting. I guess when I'm looking at the cover, yes, it's Godzilla. Could it be just kind of any random monster? Maybe a little bit. I think it's maybe the eye, the way he does the eye, where
The
I don't know.
radioactive
There's
eye.
no like light. Yeah, the radioactive eye. There's no like life there. Like there's no like it almost sort of deters the threat a little bit. I almost feel like if there was more intent in his eye, I don't know, it might be a little more scary. I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking too much about it. But that was
I
always the part
mean,
that kind of threw me off a little bit was the red
yeah, he's
eye.
got a dead eye, like the Shin Godzilla eye, which is a very dead eye, and I hate that. But in this case, yeah, I mean, you know, it's Godzilla. It's not a dinosaur because the plates, you know,
Behind.
running down his back. That's Godzilla. But it's still a Godzilla that is. He's not like cat-like, which a lot of the classic Godzilla is. So there have been many versions of him, you know, looking more or less like other animals.
Yeah,
This
absolutely.
is fine.
Yeah.
I'm not saying this is the best Godzilla art I've ever seen because it's not,
No.
but it's fine.
The story overall, and we don't have to go, bit by bit, but it's a fun story. The splash page is pretty interesting because you have like Godzilla come in sort of groin first, right at the viewer, and it's sort of an interesting perspective for Godzilla. I mean, you see stuff from the bottom up, obviously, because you want to have the sort of viewer's point of view and understand how massive he is. But in this picture, sort of Godzilla is kind of he's almost like flexing. He's dead center of the splash page. You're seeing it from sort of the ground view. You see these ranchers or cowboys running away from him as he's smashing their ranch and a car flying up in the air. And as he's stomping down, but you just have like it almost just looks like Godzilla's got this real big pot belly and he's like flexing. It's like some like 70s dad coming out of the shower or something like that, like trying to feeling good
Yeah,
about
the
himself or
legs are
something.
super chunky, and you know, because of the perspective, that doesn't help. And I mean, he's in the desert. Like, what is he gonna destroy? Like, Godzilla should be destroying buildings, but that this is all there is. So that's what it's gotta be. But Godzilla's not necessarily on model, of course, but Godzilla's never, or probably shouldn't be, the most important thing about a Godzilla story. Like with kaiju stories in general, it's rarely about the monsters themselves, and it's more about the human stories that the natural disaster that they represent interrupts. So, because you can't fight a natural disaster exactly, but in kaiju stories, there's a physical manifestation that can be fought. I mean, these guys, just normal schmoes, and they're going to try. And on occasion, people have, you know, using a certain weapon or something. But usually, I think maybe that's why the monster, the movies soon turned into monster versus monster. So you can have like two natural disasters fighting,
Yes, yeah, something
and
evenly matched, yeah.
right, and you have to, like everybody else is just like surviving this or having their own things. There's some Godzilla movies that are spy movies or alien invasion movies, and there's like these big monsters in the background kind of thing. There's one that's kind of a music, like a teen musical, I feel.
Really? Wow. Now I was just going to ask, is there a particular way that you like Godzilla represented, or you like the movie or the book around Godzilla done?
I don't know. I think there are many. The reason I like Godzilla as much as I do is because there's multiple ways to do it. And I enjoy the ones where he's, you know, a wrestler in a suit doing wrestling moves on other monsters who are wrestlers in suits. That's a lot of fun. But then the ones that I have, like, I don't know, more meaning, like the more recent Godzilla, Zero or Minus One or whatever it was.
Minus one,
And
yeah, or something like that,
yeah, Minus One, and then the original, obviously, from 1954, where it's you know, the atomic bomb. It's about humans surviving. Like, he's just a force of nature and amoral. He's not teaming up with a giant butterfly or anything, you know. Those have like a special place in my heart. But the natural disaster ones, like Minus One, like there's something to them, you know. Like it. You can do it goofy and you can do it serious. And I think that's why I like it as much as I do, you know. And there's no one better. There's no better monster in terms of franchise. I've enjoyed some Mothra movies, and I've enjoyed some Rodan, and I've enjoyed Gamera the turtle. But they're more or less all following this one particular formula. And then with the comics, you can do a lot more because it's comics. There's no budget. And like one of the ones I really, there's like a Monsterpiece Theater series going on right now. From IDW, I think. And it's Godzilla versus the Great Gatsby, that kind of thing. You know,
awesome.
They're doing like specials where it's Romeo and Juliet, but Godzilla's in the background. Moby Dick, awesome. Godzilla in the background. Yeah. So it's kind of stuff like that. So I enjoy that because you're really putting Godzilla into something else, and it shouldn't make sense.
Right.
There's a comic from the 90s that was like Godzilla versus, I think, I want to say Charles Barkley. It was like a basketball player.
Oh, yeah. And there was a sneaker commercial and everything, too. Yeah, it was a Nike commercial.
Those crazy things. There's a short, you can find it on YouTube. There's a there's a short called Godzilla versus Bambi. And it's just about a minute of animation. It's lovely. Bambi doesn't stand a chance.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So to me, you can do Godzilla in all of these different weird. So he works against superheroes. You know?
Oh, sure.
It's fine.
Sure.
It's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know they're doing a bunch of like Godzilla versus the Marvel Universe and everything now. And they've done a couple. Have you read the ones with the DC Universe?
The DC ones are the American Godzilla. They're set in the Monarch universe. American Godzilla films.
Right. Okay.
And then
because like King Kong's in them too and stuff like that.
And the Marvel ones are basically this Godzilla that we're reading now. They're the Godzilla, the Japanese Godzilla, which is the same Godzilla that it was in Marvel Comics at some point.
Okay.
So it's in that continuity. They sort of remember the series.
I see. Okay. Yeah.
And in that one, it's much crazier. Like he's getting Venom symbiotes on him. And it's all sorts like right now, I think like it's all done in like little pieces and miniseries. Mm-hmm. And like the next miniseries is like he takes on the multiverse because the previous miniseries had just ended. You know, it was something like Infinity Gauntlet, the Godzilla, you know. He's getting worse and worse, more and more powerful, more and more of a universe destroyer. So I don't know how this ends, but it's fairly entertaining. You know, you can't take it seriously.
No. It's a lot of fun. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, this story itself, and you pretty much encapsulated what happens. You, like I said, it starts off with Godzilla smashing this guy Hawks, his ranch. And he's upset because he thinks Godzilla has eaten. So he says that Godzilla has eaten 1,000 head of his cattle, and he said he's eaten half. So meaning he had about 2,000 cattle. And I'm like, that seems like a lot of cows for a ranch. So I actually looked it up to see what like the average was for a cattle ranch in like the late 70s, early 80s. And it was closer to about like 50 or 60 cattle is sort of the average. Now they said
this is a mega ranch.
Yeah, they do have mega ranches. They specifically cite a ranch in Texas that who knows, you may have worked on. I don't know.
Now
that I'm
here
on the stories, it's called like the Four Sixes, I think. And they have like 7,000 or 8,000 cattle. So this is like some monstrous, you know, ranch down there. So Hawks is obviously very mad about this because Godzilla just rampaged through his ranch and destroyed everything, and he thinks he's eaten all the cattle. Now I had a question beyond that. It's like, my God, that's a big ranch or a lot of cattle. I had a question as far as Godzilla goes. Does he normally go around like eating? Like, what does he eat? Does he eat people? Does he eat animal? I mean, like, are there some rules to this? Like,
there are rules.
Okay,
he eats radiation.
Each radiation.
Yeah, all so right. He'll attack a nuclear, power plant or something.
Okay,
that's what he eats. So this is false accusation here. This he's being framed. He's being framed for this because he's not eating cows. That doesn't make any sense. And would he really spend, I mean, eat a thousand head of cow when you're right. that size? It's like, that's a lot. That would take a long time.
Yeah.
Godzilla's like pretty big and he's got little short arms and, you know, taking them, unless he's like squirming on the ground and they're just running into his mouth. That just doesn't make sense to me. So I knew from the beginning he was innocent of this crime.
Yeah, if you think of like each cow being like a chicken nugget, like for him,
right?
You know, basically, like you're and not going to eat a thousand chicken nuggets, you know. I mean, I know he's, you know, he's like full of radiation and everything. He probably eat more than a regular person, but man, that's a lot. That's a lot of chicken nuggets, okay? Yeah. And probably almost more like chicken wings because they have bones in them too. Because you got to think, is he just going to eat all the bones anyway? I agree. It seemed fishy, and it turns out it was kind of fishy because so Hawks is getting a posse together and they're going to go after her because he thinks, I'm not going to call the authorities. I'm not going to call the military. We're going to take care of this, which I appreciate. I appreciate that they just want to go get this guy themselves. He says he wants to stop them so it doesn't happen to everybody else's ranch. But I think Hawks just wants some, he wants some get back. He wants some payback on this, or so he thinks.
Yes, it's revenge.
Yeah, yeah. And in the meantime, there is a sort of a shady guy at the meeting that Hawks is holding about forming the posse, named Ford, who is wearing a purple suit. So you know right away he's a bad guy if he's wearing a purple suit in the comic books. And he says, "Hey, I'll buy the other half of your, you know, the half of your cattle is still alive for like the bargain, you know, like for like half price and everything. You know, take them off your hands so you get something." And Hawks isn't buying it. He says he'll sell nothing. So obviously this Ford guy is known as not a very reputable character, but he is part of the posse that goes out. And that's the one thing I appreciate. These guys, they're pretty brave. I mean, they're kind of like they seem more excited, or at least, you know, maybe besides Hawks, they seem more excited than they are like scared or angry about Godzilla. Oh, yeah. You know, they're like making a day of it. They got their horses, they got their they're practicing lassoing one of the guys because they think he's about the size of Godzilla's tooth. You know, they've got their rifles, they probably pack some jerky and some chewing tobacco and some bourbon. You know, they just want to have a good old time, which is a lot of fun. You know, these guys are just want to go out and have a good time. So I kind of like that.
Yeah, there's one that looks at camera smiling. It's page 14 in the original.
Yes.
And it's like he's like super happy. We got the ornery cuss now. No, you don't. It doesn't make any sense. But at that point, it's like, well, I appreciate that there's a canyon, right? Because
it's got to be a canyon.
Because you can't have, if you can't have like these giant buildings, which is the normal environment for a Godzilla fight,
right.
You can at least have the canyon, which gives scale. And it's like he's still in a kind of a narrow street kind of environment.
Exactly.
And the bad guys don't want him to go through the canyon because on the other end of the canyon is stuff that they care about and also that they don't want the good posse to find. So they cause an avalanche, which makes Godzilla turn towards Hawk and his guys,
right?
And that's where the big fight happens. That's where they look like super happy, and you know, there's a guy that throws he lassos the tooth and he gets swung around, and I don't know if he survives.
There's a cowboy named Luke who's like the crazy one who really wants to use his lasso. Somehow he gets a lasso over like half of Godzilla's mouth. And is sort of like is trying to ride him as if
he's a little bit out of scale. I would say this is like the bit that's, and you often see that in giant monster movies. They're not always the same size depending on what's required.
Right.
Here the cowboy is way too big. He's at least twice as big as he should be, or else we wouldn't see him. But he's trying to ride Godzilla, so that's an insane move. Mm-hmm. And what happens? I guess he gets thrown off.
Yeah.
But from a great height, so I can't believe he's still alive at the end.
Yeah, we don't know. They don't really say what happened to him. As when he's riding Godzilla, they have Trimpy has a great panel where all the cowboys are like, they're like he's riding a bucky, like a one of those what do they call it? the electric bulls in an old country bar or something like that. They're all like pointing and laughing and yee-hawing him. because he's doing this. And then, yeah, and then Godzilla just ducks his head down and the guy goes flying.
Yeah, and it's after that he uses his radioactive breath.
Right.
So that's like a game changer. Mm-hmm. It's like Cool and the Gang trying to wrestle, you know, wrestle the giant lizard. Somebody makes him, like somebody calls him a giant Gila monster earlier, which is a monster movie. But once he's got like the fire breath, I don't know. I would turn back. I would say, you know, he's like, he's beaten us. And now he also has this power and he melts like the avalanche out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's over, boys.
Yeah, they keep
and it
following.
Kind of is. It kind of is. They follow, but they're not going after him per se. It's just like
they want to see where he's going. Yeah,
and they're gonna have a fight with the bad guys, mm-hmm. men, and the bad guy himself, and so on. So it they're just gonna, you know, rumble the actual crime,
right?
Finally, but they don't after this one fight against Godzilla. I think they learned their lesson.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's probably true. Yeah, they did. And then like you said, they sort of turn on each other. The guy Ford has some of his guys in the posse, and they're told to ambush Hawks and his friends, but their heart's not really into it. You know, they don't want to shoot. Nobody seems to want to kill anybody except Ford. So they all, the Ford's guys sort of give up and they're like, hey, you know, we don't want to hurt anybody. And in the meantime, Ford's goes up on the one of the sides of the cliff, and he's going to shoot Hawks because they found the other cattle as Siskoid
all
knew
all
along.
Ford stole all this stuff, and then Godzilla sneaks up. You know how it is. Rolls a 20
absolutely.
On his stealth check. You know, and tips him over with a finger, just like the claw just goes boop, and he falls to his death.
Now, do you think that's a satisfying death, or would you rather him just like blasted him with his radiation?
No, I like this because it's like you're so beneath my contempt. You know, it's just like beneath my attention. Even I can't believe he even just like made the move. It's like it's something about Godzilla, especially in this era,
mm-hmm.
The 60s and 70s, is that he's a hero. You know, like he causes a lot of destruction, but he's really saving Tokyo or wherever from the other monster is usually the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So he's supposed to be like our protector in a way. So in the Marvel comics, now he's like crossing through America at this point. I don't remember why. I'm not sure why. But he's in the old, well, not the old West, he's in the new West. He's in the West. And it just happens to be where he is. And he's just like moving forward. And this whole adventure is just like people in the way. But he's not like actively, like when he uses his flame breath, it's not on the guys. It's on rocks.
Yeah, it's just to get something out of his way. Yeah, absolutely. So he can just keep walking.
And he has a sense that Ford is the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he kills Ford mm-hmm. because he's a righteous dude somehow. Like he has a sense of it. Like he's a tornado.
Right.
Right? He's a nuclear storm. But
and also an excellent judge of character, apparently. Yes.
Somehow. You know, so he's got like that, I don't know, Japanese protector spirit, guardian mm-hmm. spirit kind of mm-hmm. persona. And he just knows, like, flick this guy off.
Yeah.
But the funniest thing, of course, is that like a giant monster passes and this guy doesn't notice.
Right.
Because in comics, you can't hear.
Yeah, exactly. You can't hear him. So
what really surprises me about the story is how little Hawks is like an active hero.
Mm-hmm.
Like he has this posse, it's his cattle. He seems to be the big heroic type, but like lassoing the tooth or jumping the Godzilla or beating the bad guy. Even like there's a fight between his man and Ford's man,
mm-hmm.
but there's never like he doesn't get in on the action, even though he looks like this brawny guy. So I'm surprised that it's never him.
Yeah. Well, he's smart. He knows Luke and some of these other guys really want to get in there. Yeah. So he's like, fine, if you guys want to do that. And he's like, I saw what just happened to Luke. He's like smushed on a rock somewhere because he tried to lasso him. So I'm not doing that. And he got his cattle back because it turned out Ford and his henchman Lefty and the other guy, they're cattle rustlers. So they had stolen all the cattle, and which is why they didn't want him to go beyond the Box Canyon. And Ford pays the ultimate price. as he's right. Splattered on the ground after Godzilla. And then Godzilla just, you know, heads. The only thing it's missing is that he wasn't heading out into the sunset. I think that's the only thing we were missing. We should have had a good like sunset
for a Western, but that would mean he would be going the wrong way.
Oh, right? Yeah.
He's walking east. So,
oh, yeah. Okay. He's going west to east. Okay.
Right. Yeah, I think he's going west to east. So, because like he was in the Pacific, obviously. So
that's true.
I think that's it. So that's too bad, of course. But also that I don't think this was I don't think they had figured this out yet, but today they do spell out his roar as Scree-Onk. And this doesn't happen in the comic. I don't think they had figured that out yet for the actual roar.
Right.
End this with, you know, a Lone Ranger joke, at least.
Yeah, who was that mask lizard? Yes.
Right. You know, so at least they've got like a little Western joke in there. You know?
Right.
But, and everything is forgiven or forgotten. Like the guy, I mean, the ranch is still destroyed.
Mm-hmm. That's yes. Yes, it is. Yeah, he's not getting it back. But he said now that he has his other cattle, he can sell that half and pay for the ranch and keep the ranch going. And I guess paychecks for the guys that were under his employ. So
right,
so,
and maybe some workman's comp.
Maybe some workman's comp for Luke wherever he may be right now, and the rest of them. Yep. So so it's a fun story, right?
It's amusing.
You know, it's not it's not going to win any Eisners, but it's I think it was worth your 35 cents. Back in the day. And I did want to ask what you thought. What do you think of Herb Trimpe in general and his art and his style and storytelling and everything?
I think he's best suited to certain things, you know? So I think like his horses and his cowboys in action and, you know, like the human anatomy. I think like he has like stylized faces, and in some ways it's a little bit Kirby-esque, which is not a bad thing for me, but when it gets more fantastical, you know, I don't love his Godzilla, for example.
Right.
Even though he was the artist on this book, but never really works for me. But if you look at, flip through the issue, a lot of different kind of viewpoints and angles. And I mean, he was like a very good draftsman, and, never going to turn my crank too quickly, but it's more than serviceable, you know?
Yeah. I always thought of him that way. And from what I've read of him, he was one of those guys that was always reliable. He's a guy you could always count on, which is, I think, one of the reasons he was definitely always, he did so much. He's kind of one of those guys that was always very prevalent in the 70s and stuff like that. I swear to this day, I think he's probably has more art in treasury format than anybody else, oddly enough, because I just remember there was a lot of like those Hulk treasuries and the Spider-Man and Hulk Olympic one. There just seemed to be a lot of treasuries that had Herb Trimpe art in it. And I first learned of him G.I. Joe. He did a bunch of the early issues of G.I. Joe, so I always had a soft spot for him. And he's not good. I don't think he's very good with faces. They're very boxy and everything that, and a little amateurish in their design. But he can draw horses, he can draw cars, he can draw structures. He's a good, like you said, he's a good draftsman. He's a pretty good storyteller, and you know, you can see why a guy like this would get a lot. He obviously has a lot of Kirby influence, like you mentioned, and when he does get into the more superhero-ish stuff. There's definitely more of that Kirby influence that you see, but he's a, you know, he was a guy. He was a guy, and he was one of those guys you could probably always count on to hit a deadline. So
for sure, and I think in this case, and it's probably why they did a Western issue, because I don't feel like Doug Mensch is like the guy I go to like he wants to do a Western, but
right.
Trimpe seems to be very interested, much more interested in doing the cowboys than the monster.
Right. Sure.
You know, so this may be throwing him a bone, like something he's interested in.
Mm-hmm.
They're using the Marvel method. He's like drawing the whole thing, and then, you know, let's have some dialogue on that.
Yeah.
But to me, like, it seems like, oh, you wanted to do a Western. You probably worked on a bunch of Westerns for Marvel or others. I've been checked, but I wouldn't be surprised. And this is a chance to use those tools
right
in a Godzilla story.
Yeah, I'm sure he has too. Did you have now you you sent me this this comic digitally so I could read it, and it has all the ads in it. Yep. Were there any of these that you wanted to mention? The one that sort of caught my eye was it was the one inside the front cover, which was the amazing energized Spider-Man. And it was sort of a hard plastic Spider-Man. Are they called points of articulation?
Yeah.
Like movement and stuff. Does like he have that? Any? Basically didn't have any. No, it didn't have any. He had his one arm sort of up with his hand sort of cupped, and then the other hand down. He's just standing tall. And he could do things like he could add a web and he could, like, I guess, zip up and down the web, or you could have the web shoot, and he could hold, like, I guess he had like a little flashlight that would, if you put it in his hand, it would shine. I assume, yeah, he had like batteries inside of him. It's made by Remco. And it was one of these things. Did you ever have this? Did you know anybody who had this?
No, not at all. I mean, that's crazy. They also got like a Micronauts toy. I did have some of those Micronauts toys.
Did you?
Yeah. Those little guys are sort of transparent. And
yeah,
like,
and they kind of came apart, didn't they? Couldn't you put their arms in it? Like they almost all, yeah. They almost
and the
came
vehicles
apart,
too, you
like
could
that.
Just say they were modular.
Yeah.
So I did have some of those. Mm-hmm. Not the one that's in the ad here, but yeah, I think the, but I mean, the one that really struck me was for our friend, Max, there's a human fly.
Yes,
that in here. That's really cool. Where the human fly is on a skateboard and he's playing the electric guitar.
Yeah,
it's like rock star stuntman superhero. So, and it just like came out of nowhere. I'd never seen before opening this. I'd never seen the house ad. Maybe Max, used it at some point. I just forgot about it. But that's the one that really hit me. And then for people who love those hostess ads.
Yeah, there's a pretty good one. There's a Thor one in there. Yeah. It's the
Thor
art's pretty
and
good.
There's there's the other people from the mythos. And of course, every time somebody talks to me about a hostess ad, I have to say that we didn't have hostess cakes in Canada.
Oh, so, really? Okay.
Or not in my part of Canada, at least. We have our own companies and our own, food. And so, and our similar cakes, but our cakes are less sugary as far as I can tell. No, we did not have hostess cakes. So people always said, oh, did you ever have, what is this one, fruit pies? No.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I had a Twinkie once in the States. Never again.
Yeah, well, these ads are really big with some of the guys in the network and everything. I was never like a big hostess guy because I grew up in the Pennsylvania area, and we had there was a company called Tasty Cake, which kind of had the same stuff, just their versions of it and stuff like that. And so I kind of grew up on Tasty Cakes and not the hostess stuff. So it was a little different for me. So I remember always seeing these ads, but I never had one of these fruit pies. I've never had one of those. To this day, I've never had one of those. And Twinkies were very rare. I've had Twinkies before, but not very often. So it wasn't something. I thought they were always kind of fun ads, but they didn't really hold any nostalgia with me just because I never had any of the snacks really. So
yeah, the same.
Yeah. Now, did you subscribe to Pizzazz by any chance? Did you? No.
I didn't. A lot of the stuff is just like America. I didn't sell grit. And I've never had a Slim Jim. I've never
really
used a super hang up. Okay. Lego. I know Lego.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you have one of the power builders? Did you?
No,
have
I've never power
strength,
built
energy and vitality. No.
So I'll tell you though about comic book ads. My dad. I'm talking a lot about my dad today for someone who was estranged from me. But but when he was a teenager, he bulked up using the Atlas method,
really,
as sold at the back of comics. Like the Hero of the Beach. Stuff.
Yeah.
He ordered out for Flex Mentallo's technique, and he actually did bulk up because I've always been a very right now I've got more of a pod belly because I'm in my 50s, but I've always been like a thin rail, and everybody like kind of in his family was kind of the similar, and he was tired of it. And as maybe a 16-year-old, he ordered out for the Atlas Method. So really? I don't know about the Power Builder, but the Atlas Method worked.
It worked. Good for him.
Because he had like a normal frame for the rest of his life.
Yeah. Wow. How about that? See, sometimes the old ways. Now, once he got that frame, would he go around to the beach and beat up random bullies? There were people he thought were bullies.
I don't know.
No, you weren't sure? All right. That'd be interesting to know.
How dark do you want to get?
I don't know. I'm enjoying these tales of Siskoid, though. I'm enjoying this stuff.
We're estranged.
Yeah.
No, I don't. Not that I know of. You know, okay. I've been to beaches, but I don't remember any fighting.
You don't remember any fighting at the beach? No. Okay. Well, that's probably good. That's probably good. So, all right. Well, really good. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about with this particular comic?
I think we've done the work. This is a series that I at some point wanted to read entirely. I know I've like covered a couple of the first issues. Mm-hmm. On my blog at some point, and I was like sort of floating it as a possibility as a weekly feature.
Mm-hmm.
But I really made it hard for me because if you look at the features, Mothra is narrating. So I had to create a graphic for instead of just writing the text, it's mm-hmm. Mothra talking. So I had her with a speech bubble, and then Rodan coming at the end with some snarky comment. So I had like other kaiju discussing the comic. It was just too much work for
What kind of voice do you think Mothra had? How do you think she sounded? Did she say like?
I think she has like a high voice.
A high voice.
She has a high voice, yeah. Like the fairies who sing her song. You know that kind of that kind of voice.
All right. Okay. Very good. All right. Well, Siskoid, then that takes us to last call. So in this segment, I ask my insightful guest Siskoid some thought provoking questions that came to me as I prepare for this show. I ask the questions. Siskoid fascinates us all with his answers. Now, as always, I have provided my guest ahead of time the first two fantastic questions, and then the third one is a mystery fantastic question. So, are you ready?
I mean, I'm ready to reject the premise of your questions, but yes.
It's going to be a short episode. This comic combines monsters and cowboys. We all know that you're a big movie guy, Siskoid. So if you could mash together any monster movie and cowboy movie, what would it be?
Well, my favorite Western is probably Tombstone.
Okay.
And I could point out that there's already a Western Kurt Russell versus monsters movie, and it's called Bone Tomahawk, in which he and his posse go up against cave-dwelling, man-eating troglodytes. Hmm. So but of course, if I were our friend Paul Hicks over in Australia, I'd mention the fourth Tremors film, which is a fun Western with monsters.
Oh, all right.
Really, it seems like I don't really need an elevator speech pitch myself. You know, it's well in hand in Hollywood.
Okay, all right. Well, I wasn't aware of it. Tell me more about the Kurt Russell one. I wasn't familiar. What is this movie?
It's a pretty dark movie. Kurt Russell is like an aging gunslinger.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets roped into, there's like these cave-dwelling troglodytes. And it may be a sort of metaphor for, you know, wars between natives and cowboys or something.
Uh-huh.
And you just don't understand the other culture, I suppose. But they're mm-hmm. kind of cannibalistic in this. And he and the posse go into these caves, and there's a big shoot 'em up. And I'm not saying how it ends, mm-hmm. but it's pretty violent. Hmm. I tried to do it on my movie show, but I couldn't get any takers for it. It's like the people saying, I don't know if I want to see that.
Yeah,
felt a little bleak.
All right,
but I do recommend it.
Okay. All right. Very good. So either that or the fourth Tremors movie.
Yeah.
Apparently.
I think when you're looking at the Tremors films, the first one is a perfect movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fourth one, I think, is next best.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I've never seen that one. I'm not even sure I knew there were four Tremors movies.
There are seven or eight.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Yeah. Well, they started making them again, different production company. It's really like cheap Sharknado kind of stuff,
right?
But they all have the dad from Family Ties.
Yeah, from Family Ties. I was just about to say that. The dad from Family Ties in?
Right, he's the conducting. You know, he's in everything, all of them. Even the Western one, he plays an ancestor of his.
Oh, okay.
So Michael Gross. That's it.
Yeah.
So Michael Gross is the connective tissue, if you will. He's in all of them and he loves them. And I don't know if he's in the very last one. I don't know. But because at some point, you know, he's getting old and he needs to not be in these. But he even came back for the cheap ones that were made like direct to DVD at some point or direct to streaming. We watched them all like in February. We have like a family day. Family day is like a day we have here in Canada, just to, is an extra paid holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And we always, because it's a long weekend, we always have a movie marathon with a particular theme or franchise. This year we did Tremors, and I'd only ever seen the first one, but eventually, you know, Tremors in the Sky, Tremors in the West, or Tremors in the Ice. It's, you know, there are many permutations.
Right.
And I stand by that. The first one is great. And I think the fourth one is second best.
Interesting. All right. The West. I have to check that out. I might just watch the fourth one sight unseen, not watch any of the others.
I don't think you need the other ones.
Okay, good. All right, very good. All right, well, fantastic question number two. Put together your comic book Magnificent Seven. Of course, I was thinking of Magnificent Seven because this was a cowboy-centric Godzilla issue. Any seven comic characters for a specific mission.
Right, and we're making like Magnificent Seven isn't a ripoff of Seven Samurai. Okay, so yeah.
All right, I think that, fine.
Name Seven Samurai. Okay, so I think the question is a bit vague.
It is.
Because I don't know what the mission is. So I guess
you can kind of come up with your own mission. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it needs to be like defending a village from villains, right? It has to be the Magnificent Seven mission.
Yeah.
And my seven super samurai might then be, I'm just going to say that the classic JLA. I mean, it's built in. Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, Green Lantern, Flash, Aquaman, and the Martian Manhunter. They're already seven or the super seven.
Mm-hmm.
Seems a bit overpowered. But what has to be done?
Yeah, for clearing out some bad guys in a Superman just going to walk into the saloon and just sit down and tell them to get lost, or what's going to happen?
Well, I think maybe the village is a planet and the bullies are like an intergalactic, you know, it's a bit like the Supergirl movie or something, like really like an evil gang.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, something like that, and they're big enough and powerful enough, and have so many ships that you need the whole league.
All right, okay,
yeah, that's it.
All right, very good. Just as an aside, this isn't the Mystery Fantastic question. You mentioned the Supergirl movie. You saw it. What did you think of it?
I liked it more than I didn't.
Yeah,
because I went in and it was like, well, I'll tell you right now, I haven't been shy about it. Mm-hmm. I despise Tom King's writing, and I could not stomach the opening chapter of Supergirl, the Woman of Tomorrow comic, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. on which this is based.
Right.
You know, basically from the urban legend seems to be, I believe it to be true, that he pitched a Lobo miniseries. You know, it's True Grit, but it's Lobo.
Right.
And they said, you can't have Lobo. He said, well, Supergirl then? You know, it's something like that. You know, it's like... It's a round peg, a square hole.
Yeah, was that really his second choice? Was he like, I have a Lobo story?
Like, who can
no?
I use?
Okay, how about Supergirl? Yeah.
It's absurd. So it's never, like, the characters are never what they're supposed to be. So this is why Lobo is in the movie. It's kind of a wink at it was originally his story.
Okay.
So it's kind of a fruit from the poison tree, even as I go in. And I was like, do I go? Do I not go? And like we have like this standing date. Me and a couple of the girls and Marty, who was married to one of them, we're the core four who go to the movies every week.
Right. Okay.
We're even famous at the theater.
Oh.
They know who we are and so on. And so I was like, that was the only movie that was out. It was either that or like Toy Story or something.
Right.
And I was ready to say, I'm just not going to go this week. And every day I would change my mind. Well, maybe, you know, maybe it's better than I think, or maybe I just like, you know, I'd like to have an opinion rather than be spoiled or something. I don't
know.
So in the end, I decided to go with an open mind. Well, this is key, right?
Yeah.
Knowing that it's going to be problematic and I don't like the source story.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between 8 issues of purple prose covering up all the art from Tom King
Right.
And a movie that has to be told in you know, 100 minutes or something, 100, it's under 2 hours. And no, I did enjoy it. I liked her performance. There's a controversial bit at the end, which I think could have easily been fixed, but I'm taking it as it is. I don't have a problem with it. I feel like it could have been a better DC movie because you get a lot of aliens and none of them are from the DC universe as far as we know, you know?
Oh, okay. Okay. Like they could have used ones that already exist in the DC universe just to tie things in, you're saying?
I mean, this is where it looks like a Lobo movie. Because when you look at a Lobo comic, he's in these bars and it's all these like fanciful aliens and none of them are recognizable, you know, Green Lanterns or something, right?
Right.
So there's none of that. It's just like nobody from the Invasion, nobody from a Green Lantern or something. No coons
or anyone from Imsk or anything like that. Yeah,
exactly. No Dominators, no.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I mean, you could have put the action in the Vega star system and have all the Omega Men races, right?
Yeah,
it's not like that. So there's no like Easter eggs, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. If you don't know anything about the DC universe, you don't notice. And they did change the villains, at least their appearance in the comic turns into this sword and sorcery thing. Okay. It doesn't even feel like science fiction.
I've tried just not to interrupt. I've tried to read it. Like four times. I have a subscription to DC Infinite Ultra, whatever.
Yep.
So I've tried to just read it on there a couple times, and sort of like you, I haven't been able to get past the first issue. I got the actual trade paperback of it because they send it to me for free. Is every year you can get a different, you know, trade paperback from there, but that's the only one I didn't have yet. So I got that, and I haven't really touched it yet. And I may just give it to someone as a gift. And I just haven't been able to get past it. So, is it worth? I know you're not a Tom King fan. Is it worth at least reading, or is it? Or
no,
or you just it's not even worth reading.
Okay. No, I don't think it's worth reading. I think it looks pretty. It looks pretty.
Yeah, the art's interesting. Yeah,
towards the back, there's like Comet the Super Horse kind of stuff, but the villain is kind of like this barbarian, whatever. So in the movie, it's more like Mad Max. The girls were quite impressed with Lobo.
Okay, with Momoa.
I thought that was an interesting, you know, like.
Oh, you mean he would be hotted? Is that what you're saying?
He would be hotted. Okay, yeah, because we're never gonna do him because he's not in the original Who's Who.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's not. That's true. Yeah.
So for them, it was new. For me, it was like, well, obviously I know Lobo, but I think it was like he was a fun character in it. Mm-hmm. Obviously Jason Momoa was born to play it.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
And they did the thing. Remember in the Superman animated series in the 90s?
The ones that Lobo's in?
Whenever Lobo shows up, the score changes. It turns into electric guitar. It's kind of like that.
Okay.
Well, that was like in terms of Easter eggs, which aren't very many.
Right.
I mean, The story has shrunk down where you understand better the stakes, where Supergirl, it's like if you put Supergirl in the DC comics today in True Grit and in that situation and getting drunk and whatnot, it feels off-putting because she has a history.
Right.
In the DC movies, she doesn't have a history.
That's true.
Who is this girl? And so she's very fresh off losing Argo City. And so it's about survivor's guilt.
Sure.
And how it makes her misbehave. And it makes sense within the film. And I think, you know, in terms of how the film plays out, it stands, you know, it stands the test for me.
Gotcha.
So, you know, I was surprised at how much I did enjoy it.
Oh, good. Well, I'm happy to hear it. I haven't seen it yet. I will eventually. But yeah, I was just curious kind of like what you thought. I like, is it Millie Alcock? Alcott,
Alcock.
Okay, she. I really liked her. She was in the first season of House of the Dragon, on HBO, and I really liked her in that. And I think she makes a very, at least just visually, I think she makes a very good Supergirl. So
she's good in this.
Definitely,
I think she's good in this. She's got like she has to show some range, and she does. And what was important to me was that a bit like the Batman that. I don't necessarily agree with the direction during the film, but I want that hero to be to be set up to be the comic book hero by the end.
Gotcha.
And this, like, the Batman worked on that level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Supergirl, maybe not as well, but I think we get her to, like, beyond this characterization.
Gotcha. So you'd be happy, you'd be fine seeing her in another movie after this.
Oh,
in other words, if she shows up in the next Superman movie or whatever.
Yeah, I hope we do.
Movie.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Okay, good. Good. That's good to hear. All right. Well, we're ready for the mystery. Are you ready for your mystery fantastic question?
I mean, how can you be ready?
It's true.
I've written down improv. That's what I wrote in my notes. Improv?
I thought maybe you'd written down like 7 various answers just in case it was that question. And then you'd be like, you know.
No, I have no idea what you're going to ask.
Anyway, well, it's okay. Well, now, this happens a lot. I have a mystery fantastic question ready. And as I go along with the show towards the end, I kind of want to change it. Or it gets answered, or I'm like, no, now I have a more interesting question I want to add. So I might be able to throw both in at the same time. So as we mentioned before, at the beginning of the show, it's hot outside now. It's summertime. It's, we have hit summertime. What does Siskoid do in the summertime? What are some of your favorite things to do? What do you do? Are there vacations you take? Are there certain things you like to do outside or places you like to go, or what do you just like to frolic in the woods? What do you like to do? What does Siskoid do in the summertime?
Well, outside is now, just a radioactive wasteland now.
Well,
yeah. So.
Well, not maybe today, but just in general,
Well, in general. Yeah. I would say that the weather here in the summer is comparable to Louisiana's.
Mm.
Okay. So that's humid, hot and humid.
It was that bad. Interesting.
What do I do with my summer? Well, the one big thing in the summer for me is that we do, I wrote down improv, right? So we do have an improv tournament for adults.
Okay.
Most of the year, the season is for, we cater to high school students and primary school students, that kind of thing. But the big adult tournament is in July. So it means there's like an influx of people from the community, from across the province, even other provinces come down, and it's like a big reunion. And that's one of the places where I will have a drink during their year. So that I'm looking forward to that.
Somebody has some cooking sherry down there you can sip on or something like
that. Yeah. I've won the things 3 times myself.
Oh, you have? Wow.
Oh, yeah. But I don't.
Wait, when you say you've won, what does that
Well, it's
entail?
Competitive
is it
improv,
you
right?
So by it's. Or is it you with a group? Or
no. What? Okay. It's teams. It's so the way improv works in French Canada, it was kind of started in Quebec or Montreal, whatever, in the 70s. And it's kind of, it's mirrored on it's based on a hockey game, the look of it.
Okay.
With the rink and the shirts and the referees and penalties and that kind of thing. So normally I think my best place for me is being a referee, which I'm refereeing this tournament. I have been for a bit.
Gotcha.
I've played it a number of times, whatever. But you have a team of 4 to 6, depending on the format, and you're going up against another team, and you're doing sketches as required by the referee, and you try to stay within the bounds of respecting the other team and respecting the integrity of the story and that kind of stuff, or else you get penalties, get points at the end because the public votes on which team they like.
I was going to say, you're doing this in front of a large crowd. Are you on a stage? Or you?
Yes.
Yes,
it's on a stage. So it's like,
all right, what?
French Canada had this like version of it, which we call match improv. I guess I'm translating. And then around the same time, English Canada out west, they started what they called, I guess they called it just theater games or something like that. Theater sports. And like Kids in the Hall started out as an improv team.
Oh, okay.
And then graduated to, let's write up these sketches that we improvised. And then that's how these started out. So that it would be like the famous. So you've got that format. Like our format in Canada is competitive. And you do have some of that in the States. I know there's like a team. For a while, there was a league in Boston that played just like us. And it spread to French-speaking countries. So France, et cetera, have leagues that look like our own. And those leagues are like every school has a league, or not a league necessarily, but a team, and they do meet. So it's a big thing to develop the French language and language skills, and it's a cultural activity, but there's also a sport, and you can win medals in certain levels, et cetera. So I've been involved in that for 35 years or something, I guess.
Wow.
But yeah, it's I mean, and it's also my moneymaker. I give workshops. I write about it. My French language podcast is about that. And so, you know, I give shows. Like when I give a show, it's not like this competitive stuff. It's let's put on an improvised play, or let's just do like a Whose Line Is It Anyway kind of format, that kind of stuff. And so we tour the province and, you know, that kind of stuff, and for money, for cash. But it's been a long road, you know, like getting like artist status and all of that stuff has been.
Yeah. And I'm decades. Sorry. So, and when is this again? This is coming
so
up.
So late July will be.
Late July. Okay.
Yes.
The, so it's coming up.
If I,
couple it's weeks. Up. Yeah.
It's in 3 weeks or three, yeah. 4 weeks. So
are you ready? Are you set? Are you?
No. Because I haven't been given my schedule.
Okay.
But once I mean, I'm the fastest theme writer in the West. So
in the
it's,
West.
It's not
all
a,
right.
Well, in the East, I guess I live in the East. But,
yeah.
In improv. So that's not a problem. I'll be ready the week
right.
of.
All right. Yeah,
it's improv. You don't get ready.
Sure. Well, that's true. That's
you
true.
Just
I just
are
meant
ready.
Mentally. Are you mentally
just
prepared
are ready.
For this?
Yeah, of course I'm ready. And I've been coaching, like even tonight, I was giving workshops to there's a team from Newfoundland who comes down.
Okay.
So they're very far away, and they don't have a lot of support over there. So I zoom in, I teach them tricks and stuff. Well, tricks, tools.
Mm-hmm.
There's no tricks. But I teach them tools and so on. So they're going to come in. So I've got like the team I coach, but I'm also refereeing them possibly. It's a fun time. It's a fun
That's
time.
Great.
There's probably a karaoke on one of the nights, and I'll be forced to sing something maybe.
Oh, okay. Do you have
I don't know what my range is. I just don't know what my range is. Like I want to sing Violent Femmes stuff, you know? It's kind of like the 80s indie is kind of my where what I want to sing, but I don't know if it's my range. So I don't do enough karaoke to know.
Well, maybe
otherwise
you could prepare.
Otherwise I'm just going to broil in my apartment. That's my summer plan.
Oh, that's terrible. Do you have a fan at least? Do you have a fan to?
Yes. And as soon as this ends,
you
I will be turning it on.
So I'm sorry. You're roasting as I blather on about Godzilla. Yeah. All right.
It's also a split level, so once I go down to the basement, it's gonna be fine.
It'll be.
I sleep in the basement, and you know it's fine.
Okay. Okay. Very good. All right. Well. Oh, real quick. Also, since we were talking about summer, and I've heard these tales of Siskoid that I enjoyed. Tell me one of your summer jobs as a young Siskoid.
Well, as a young Siskoid, well, I'm always stuck in Texas. I was, you know, and I was always so
right.
it's.
Well, it could other be a slightly older Siskoid then, you know, whatever. Like I know about the vineyard and everything. Is there anything, any other?
Well, I think my first job was again for my dad, and it was working at the clinic and inputting all the insurance stuff for Medicaid and Medicare and whatever other providers they had.
Uh-huh.
So it was just like computer jockey stuff in 1992, so imagine like the huge floppy disks and what I remember from that job, I mean there was a nice community, like the nurses and the secretaries, and you know I've always been good in office setting, I guess, but the job itself, what was fun about it, it was like the patients' names sometimes, and even though it's a very small town, and shout out to whoever in Ballinger if they're still there, but there was this family who I think the only patient in the family was like the mom and one baby, who my dad had like overseen the pregnancy. But each of the kids, there were like five, had names from geek related. They were like, I think the last name was something like Rodriguez. Okay.
Okay.
But their first names were Apollo, Athena, Starbucks. So those three are from Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
And then I don't know. There was one I don't remember. And the new baby was called Superman. Superman Rodriguez.
They named their baby Superman.
Superman Rodriguez, who today would be in his 40s. Shout out. I handled your insurance papers.
I want to get Superman Rodriguez on the show.
I mean, probably change his name by now. I can't imagine going through school being called Superman.
Yeah.
God, but like these kind of hippie geek parents. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. I don't know about that. Yeah. I mean, Starbuck is bad enough, but
Starbuck at least is from Moby Dick as well.
Okay. All right.
It's the first mate in Moby Dick is called Starbuck.
That's true.
So I guess it's a real name.
Yeah, it is, but still you know how everybody's going to associate it. So
sure. Sure.
Yeah. All right. Very good. I guess Siskoid, you know, I've learned so much about you this evening. This is great. This is great. Well, I'm going to have to have you on the show another time so I can hear more adventures of Siskoid, because I really enjoyed this. But listen, it is closing time.
Yep.
And Siskoid, I can't thank you enough for being on the show. So where can listeners find you? Where the many places listeners and readers can find you, I should say.
Well, right now, I'm concentrating on Hot or Not with the Hot Squad and FW Team Up with various network all-stars, both monthly at the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I still write one post a day on geek-related matters at Siskoid's blog of geekery. Mm-hmm. And I've just released my first ebook, a collection of short stories called Agent Fry, 5 Mission Reports. It's about a literary agent who defends the zeitgeist from bad literary criticism set in the worlds of world literature. And it's
How
available
can people
on
find that. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Well, it's available on Kobo, which is the best place royalty wise. Thank you. And other outlets like Barnes and Noble's, Apple, Smashwords. It's just not on Amazon.
All right.
Right. Agent Fry, FRYE : 5 Mission Reports. So if you put that in the search bar, you should find it.
All right. All right. That's awesome. Well, congratulations on that. And like I said, thanks again for being on the show. Definitely check out Hot or Not. It's terrific. The girls are great. I had Shotgun on the show, the kickoff this year, actually. She was my first guest of 2026, and she was a wonderful guest as well. So definitely check out all of Siskoid's shows. They're terrific. So, and he's sort of the man behind, he's the one that keeps the trains running on time, basically, in the FW network, you know.
I do.
Robin, oh, I think so. God, with the I don't know.
The fascist?
You're not the fascist, but I don't know. You seem to be, I always view Siskoid, you know, we all sort of have our purpose, I guess, more or less. I'm still trying to find mine, but
good thing the boys don't listen to your show.
I think they'd agree with that, wouldn't they? You don't think they'd agree with that? Maybe not. Maybe I'm going to get my pink slip tomorrow from Shag. I'm not sure. But anyway, but I really enjoyed this. Like I said, I had a blast. If you haven't listened to it before, everybody, please go check out.
No Escape from Kurt Russell. Yes. It's on the Siskoid Cinema feed. And we did a Tango and Cash retrospective.
Yeah. Yeah, it was so much fun. Yeah. I had a blast doing that. It's great. Oscar nominated Tango and Cash, I believe. I don't know. I may have that wrong, but probably not.
I mean, so, if Suicide Squad can get an Oscar.
Exactly. All right. Well, thanks again, Siskoid. And we will be right back.
Which is the hottest Marvel character?
Iron Man.
Ant-Man. I can't decide between Professor X and Magneto, so both.
Loki.
Is Wolverine Marvel?
What about White Tiger?
What about White Tiger?
Doc Samson.
Doc who?
Star Fox.
That's a video game.
The girls go on a journey to determine every Marvel character's hotness in Ohotmu or Not, the official handbook of the Marvel Universe podcast you didn't know you wanted. Available on iTunes and at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
And we're back. Here's the feedback from episode 20 with Doug Adamson featuring Blue Beetle and a banana daiquiri. Sitting on the high top, Mark Baker Wright says, I confess I never really caught Blue Beetle in his own series, knowing him mostly through JLI. Your discussion was prompting me to look up not only his DC series, but I really should have looked up Ted Kord's pre-DC appearances as well. Oddly enough, I have read the earliest Dan Garrett stories and have also listened to the old-time radio series, which has a character with Dan's name who seems to bear only a passing resemblance to the comic version.
I remember being really annoyed at Ted's death, not just because I liked the character, but precisely because his successor seemed to have no relationship whatsoever to the previous Blue Beetle. So it seemed like still does, truth be told, they wanted to use the Blue Beetle name and only the name for a totally unrelated character. Why not just give the guy his own name and leave poor Ted alone? Of course, there's an irony to the fact that pretty much exactly the same thing happened when Dan was killed off to make way for Ted. Last month's very guest Doug Adamson replied to Mark saying, "That's an excellent point about Blue Beetle. Every iteration is different completely from the last, yet somehow they can all mash together well if they need to. I don't think there's another legacy superhero manage that. Still, we know Ted is still around, so I think we can all raise a blue/green glass to that." FW Godfather, host of Fade Out and sometimes Treasury Cast, Rob Kelly says, he says IIRC. So I'm assuming that means if I recall correctly, because Rob speaks almost entirely in abbreviations. Anyway, if I recall correctly, when we had dinner with Doug after seeing Superman, he ordered a meal and the waiter asked if he wanted grated cheese on it, and he got way more on it than the waiter expected. That's, of course, referring to, if you listen to the episode, Doug's choice of weapon. Big Tip and Bucky 749 says, "First, I'll say that the one blue raspberry lemonade on the rocks, please, and thanks. And my brother will have a chocolate milkshake, shaken, not stirred." Just wanted to write that. Thank you, Bucky. Now the fantastic question. In the Blue Beetle movie, we know the third Blue Beetle loves his tacos. What do you think Ted Kord would order if he and Booster hit the lounge? Good question, Bucky. I think probably Ted would go with a burger and a domestic beer. He seems like a burger guy to me. And while I think Booster would probably go with a big salad and maybe a gin and tonic. Always getting in a booth with his back to the wall, Edo Boznar says, "Well, my experience with the Blue Beetle is reading the original Charlton series by Ditko and Company, which I liked, and then seeing the movie, which I also liked. Now I've listened to the episode, and I like that too." Thank you, Edo. And that would be the sum total of my comment. However, I have to express fascination with the fact that Doug is a Scot who doesn't drink. That's particularly jarring in light of the recent news pieces about the Scottish fans at the World Cup and the U.S. draining local bars in places like Boston of all their beer. Even more weirdly fascinating to me is the fact that Doug is so deeply into American football. One of the things I like about not living in the U.S. since the 1990s is that most people here in Europe know very little or care less about two American team sports that I've never liked, football and baseball. However, I should note that my immediate family, my older brother, did like American football, and his lifelong favorite team was none other than the Cleveland Browns. Oof. Well, Edo, that's a reason not to like football right there. But Doug also replies to Edo saying, "I also hate golf, playing and watching, and I'm useless on ice for curling. In fact, if I was sold as a traditional Scotsman, I would be wanting a big discount, if not my money back. I do, however, have a kilt, which I might not fit at the moment. I have painted myself with blue paint at NFL Europe football games and retain a canny eye for a bargain. Thanks for sharing about your older brother being a Browns fan. At least you were more sensible than he was about not liking football." Fantastilines regular Dr. Ann says, "Great episode. I really feel that DC was exploding with creativity in the Legends time period. Suicide Squad, Captain Atom, the Wally Flash, and Blue Beetle were all coming out in this new universe. I collected this Beetle book for the first year or so, and I thought that it was a real hoot. I don't mind the quippy, snarky hero prototype, and Ted fits the bill. Even the fact Ted is just a guy who is smart and also was also a winner. Heck, earlier in the series, the creators introduced a question to the post-crisis DCU, making him another snarky, wisecracking hero. Shortly thereafter, we get the O'Neill Zen/serious Vic Sage. Great to hear Ted get some well-deserved love, but two blue drinks in a row? I almost forgot to mention, Doug is a Miami Dolphins fan? If only he had visited New England instead of Miami, he would be rooting for the best franchise in the NFL. Okay, first of all, Ange, how dare you besmirch having two drinks in a row? It's funny. It just kind of worked out that way. And while, yes, Doug is a Miami Dolphins fan, at least he's not a Patriots fan. Anyway, Doug replied to Dr. Ann saying, "I know all of Boston has fallen in love with the Scots, like Munich did beforehand, but I just have to let the air out of your tire, because if I change teams now, that would be cheating. And I'm sure Dr. Ange finds that comment very deflating. FW All-Star and host of DC Special Cast, Paul Kien, and World Traveler, Paul Kien, says, outstanding episode, fantastic stories about Doug and his NFL love. Blue Beetle was okay for me, except in JLA, but I do have recently read the DC Finest with some Dan Garrett and original Ted with Ditko art, and is a lot of fun. Over in the slot machine, Super Captain says, this episode was a lot of fun. I knew that Doug was an American football fan, but I didn't realize that he's an American football royalty in the UK. I played a bit when I was in junior high, but it wasn't very good at all. Now American football is well behind basketball, baseball, and soccer in terms of my favorite team sports. His story about discovering the Miami Dolphins reminded me of my own experience of falling in love with soccer some years ago. I have favorite clubs in several leagues, but my wife absolutely refuses to let me cheer openly for Celtic or Rangers, despite the fact that we are both of Scottish heritage. I'm a Protestant and she grew up Catholic. We don't need to introduce that dynamic into our household, where we already have the divide between San Francisco 49ers and the Dallas Cowboys. Jeez. This is Brett, Super Captain. I like you, and I'm sure Mrs. Super Captain is a wonderful person. But, oh, God, the Niners and the Cowboys in the same household. Blech. Anyway, Super Captain continues. As far as Blue Beetle, I love all three versions. In fact, whenever I wear my Blue Beetle t-shirt and am asked if I'm a fan of Ted or Jaime, nobody seems to remember Dan Garrett, of course, I just say yes. I especially appreciated Ted's nerd romance with Barbara Gordon in Birds of Prey. Never too far from the bar, Nate the Great says, I like Ted's solo series, and in some ways, Jaime Reyes should have been his sidekick. But really, Blue Beetle and Booster Gold are one of the all-time great buddy teams in comics. If you have a Blue Beetle drink, you should have a Booster Gold Buffalo Wings. It's a good point, Nate. Water skiing over to the waterfront tiki bar, John Stibe says, I thought this was a great episode of The Pour, not just because I like Blue Mocktails. I really like Ted Kord Blue Beetle. I first met him in Crisis on Infinite Earths issue 1 and immediately thought he could be DC's answer to Spider-Man. I bought his solo series, but I felt it lost its way somewhere along the way, so I can't even say I've read them all. I love Ted and the JLI, along with Booster, of course, and was deeply bummed when Maxwell Lord, of all people, killed him. I'm glad he got better. I also enjoyed the early issues of Jaime Reyes. I am a fan of young superheroes getting or inheriting powers and trying to figure them out, like Nova, Firestorm, etc. But Jaime was not Ted, and he was also not DC's answer to Spider-Man. And finally, I was very impressed to hear about Doug's pedigree regarding the NFL and his love for American football. I remember watching the NFL Europe games during the offseason of the NFL and hearing names like the Scottish Claymores or the Frankfurt Galaxy brought back memories to me. I almost talked about my love for the Green Bay Packers on an episode of The Pour, but instead I shared my story about DC superheroes water skiing at SeaWorld. Oh well, maybe next time. Great show as always, Brett. Thanks, John, and I'll make sure next time you're on we talk some Packers. Always hanging out at the sports bar. Martin Gray says, apologies for the delay. Again, I'm a terrible pub hopper. I was spending too much time in the local sports bar. See what I just tell you, Martin. Like Doug, I cannot metabolize alcohol. I spent ages in the sixth form trying to find my drink, but everything made me vomit within about 2 minutes flat. Even Holy Communion would have me keel over. The Blue Beetle cocktail sounds intriguing, but I might have a problem. I used to love the taste of banana, but I developed a condition called Barrett's esophagus, which means I have a regular endoscopies. The sedative they give you is banana flavored, and now associate the taste of bananas with the feeling of metal tubes going down into my stomach and the memory of nipping the biopsy teeth. Oof. So no bananas or blue food coloring. It's like liquid Smurfs or whipped cream, which isn't to say I don't have an ingredient in my pocket, should I ever be asked. I'm not going to touch that one, Martin. I enjoyed Doug's story about Green Kryptonite. Oh, that's very good. I like the post-crisis Blue Beetle series. It wasn't rewriting comics, but it was a rock-solid run in terms of craft, and it was exciting to see how DC integrated Ted. Plus, it had a great issue telling the story from the point of view of a henchman, with the supervillain being, in network favorite, the Calculator. Oh, that's interesting. It was weird how bald David Clinton was in this issue, given Gil Kane's based him on Richard Nixon. Frank and I were talking about Kronos in his Secret Files podcast recently. I love that gorgeous outfit. I love the idea of Doug using squeezy cheese as a weapon. Just call him Martin. Is that correct? Captain Primula? Anyway, definitely check out the comedian Bob Monkhouse, one of Doug's favorite blue things. He was a genius of wit, starring in such shows as our version of Hollywood Squares, Celebrity Squares. And as a very young man, he wrote for UK Humor Comics. I'm sorry Doug had such a crappy time. As a kid from the old firm Footy Fans, the sectarianism is indeed hideous, perpetrated by the deeply stupid. Anyway, thank you to all who listen. Be sure to subscribe to The Fantastic Four, available on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Spotify. And of course, please leave a 5-star review. I know I keep meaning to read the 5-star reviews, and every time we've been getting a lot of feedback, I want to make sure I read that. I will get around to it, I promise. And thank you. Please leave the 5-star reviews. And I promise you guys, maybe I'll do a special episode coming up soon, a little bonus episode, and I'll read all the 5-star reviews. Anyway, Fantastic Four is a proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. You can find all episodes of Fantastic Four and many other quality shows at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Please leave comments on the website. Let me know what you think of the show. I read all feedback at the end of every episode. You can follow us on Facebook at FW Podcast Network, Blue Sky at FW Podcasts, Instagram at Fire & Water Podcast, or use our hashtag online, hashtag FW Podcasts. I can be found on Instagram and Blue Sky at Imaginate Design. Thanks again to Siskoid for hanging out at the Fantastic Lounge. Until next time, the bar is open.